And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. Scott Spears back with you here on this Wednesday, March the 22nd, 2017. 1:15 coming up on 1:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to have Eleanor Cliff from the Daily Beast on momentarily, but as I said, we would have her on. But there was a terrorist attack, so Eleanor is a little delayed. A terrorist attack near the United Kingdom's Parliament. Details are still emerging at this point after a police officer was stabbed near the United Kingdom's Parliament, while eyewitnesses report said a car mowed down several people on a nearby bridge. It was not immediately clear if the incidents are linked. What they know at this point is the victims. There are a number of casualties, including police officers, according to a London police commander. One woman was killed in the incident, while others have catastrophic injuries, the United Kingdom Press Association has reported. Eyewitness reports say the car plowed into people on Westminster Bridge, just up the road from where the vehicle slammed into a railing outside Parliament. The full extent of the other injuries is unknown. A London police commander said the incident near Parliament Square has been declared a terrorist incident. British police have thwarted 13 terror plots since the 2013 murder of Lee Rigby. British security services said earlier this month Rigby was off duty when he was attacked and killed near the Royal Artillery Barracks in southeast London. So that is what we know at this point. So I guess we will learn about that. I'm sure that'll be on your evening news tonight. And on all internet sources and cable news channels right now. So that's what we know. We also know that coming up tomorrow on this program, on March the 23rd at 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will have former Democratic presidential nominee for President of the United States, Michael Dukakis, on the program tomorrow. And we also have another big guest we're trying to line up for the 1 o'clock hour tomorrow, so you won't want to miss any of this program tomorrow. And Friday, we have a big guest lined up Friday morning, which I can tell you about now. On Friday morning at 10:15 a.m., we will be joined in his first interview after the healthcare debate or vote tomorrow by our state representative, Jim Jordan. That will be Friday morning at 10:15 right here on WWGH Radio, Friday morning, March the 24th. So many things going on here, so many big guests coming up this week, so many things you have to know. So remember, tomorrow, Michael Dukakis, 12:15 in the afternoon, Friday morning, Representative Jim Jordan, the day after the healthcare debate, in his first interview at 10:15 in the morning. So it's flying by, it's big information, it's big stuff, and you won't want to miss a minute of it here on WWGH Radio, because we are having a very good time bringing you all of this information. We are going to break here momentarily, and we're going to try to catch up with Eleanor Cliff. Don't you dare go anywhere. Don't even think changing that dial from the talking place. It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio, 10 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being, that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean, most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Yes. Doesn't it just? I never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWG Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you know, Charlie Evers is a Marion radio legend, and you can catch him right here on WWGH 107.1 FM and streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Charlie also takes your calls on anything under the sun by calling this number, 740-383-9944. Speedy delivery.
The Fayee Bank Charlie Evers Show every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Hi, this is Steve Boom Boom Cannon, and as the king of trivia, I've got a question for you. Where can you find great talk, open celebrities every day? Now with Scott Spears on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP. We're in Marion, Ohio. Call him at 740-383-9944. Streaming live on the internet at www.wgh1071.com.
From 12:10 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. This is Scott Spears inviting you to join me and broadcasting legends Marianne Michaels and Charlie Evers every Friday from 12:10 to 1 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. And we're back here on WWGH Radio, 23 minutes past the hour. And I believe now we are joined by, from the Daily Beast and former panelist on the McLaughlin Group, Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, how are you?
Yes, I'm here. I'm okay, thank you.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. Eleanor, we were just reading the reports this morning about the attack in Parliament. Is there any news on your end on that?
No. I mean, I think we all are kind of watching television, and I'm sure people are scrambling. I think the fear is that, you know, this could potentially have coordinated attacks in other cities, other Western cities could be targets as well. But so far, it looks like the Brits have it under control, and they're trying to find out if it was just a lone one or two people, whether the person who drove the car that went into people and the person that wielded the knife, are they the same person? Or I think, you know, it's just, we don't know anything except people seem very convinced that it can be called an act of terrorism.
Eleanor, aside from that particular incident, every week we say this, that it's such a full week. This week might really take the cake after the testimony of FBI Director James Comey on Monday, really for the first time stating that the FBI is investigating possible ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. What did you make of Comey's testimony on Monday?
Oh, I thought that was really a bombshell. He confirmed what everybody suspected was the truth, and that is that there was an ongoing investigation into the Trump campaign and contacts between possibly Trump himself or likely Trump himself and other people with Russia, and that had begun late in the summer. So this was not a new investigation. And then secondly, that he would refute in real time two of the tweets that the president put out. I mean, this is an act, a sitting attorney general basically publicly disagreeing with the sitting president on live television. It's extraordinary. And then put that up against all the hypocrisy of a campaign that ran so aggressively against Hillary Clinton. You know, lock her up. If she were elected and there were an FBI investigation ongoing into the president, that would trigger a constitutional crisis. Well, here we are, I guess. And I don't know where this is all going to lead, but it's such a cloud over this administration, and at the same time that they're trying to confirm a judge to the Supreme Court, it awakens a lot of resentment among Democrats who feel that the Trump's Supreme Court nominee is vying for a seat that belongs to President Obama's nominee. And that resentment, I think, is heightened by the fact that we have a White House that's, you know, under active investigation. You know, how can we go forward and allow the Supreme Court process to go forward at the same time? Although I think it will, there's just a lot of frustration and anger on the Democratic side.
I was intrigued last night. John Dean, who was Nixon's counsel during Watergate, I don't have the quote in front of me, but basically said yesterday that this is on that scale. I believe what the quote was similar to was that the Trump White House is in cover-up mode right now. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to cover up. John Dean was certainly there during the Nixon cover-up, really the reason that Nixon went down in the end, one of the big reasons.
I actually watched that. I saw it not last night, but the night before, actually. I think it was previous night. Maybe I'm getting my nights confused as well. But he said that the way the White House is behaving, it's cover-up-ish, I think was his exact quote. And he recalled when he first turned on the Nixon White House. President Nixon first said, you know, he barely knew him, had never met with him, and then said, well, maybe we met a couple times, and it was actually 37 times. And Dean compared it to Sean Spicer saying about Paul Manafort, the campaign manager who ran the Republican convention for Trump. And there's new reporting about him and sort of potential money laundering from Ukraine. And the response of Sean Spicer, the press secretary, was, oh, he only spent a very brief while with the Trump campaign, and he's not in the White House now, so we can't really, you know, we don't really own him anymore. So I think that was the comparison there, that the White House is furiously trying to distance themselves from people who are getting more actively caught up in this probe.
What I'm confused about, Eleanor, is that the out of FBI Director Comey's mouth on Monday, the investigation started in July of 2016 and is still going on now. Now, we obviously know that in July of 2016, FBI Director Comey personally spoke out on Hillary Clinton. He did it again the week before election. But on election day, only one person was under investigation by the FBI, and that was Donald Trump. Now, you know, I don't want to make it a political issue, but why talk about Hillary Clinton's investigation and never mention Donald Trump's?
I think he's on very weak ground in his defense. But what he said at the hearing was that the Clinton investigation had been closed. Remember, he gave that press conference in which he said all the things he had against her, but then decided that it did not rise to the level of an indictment. So in his mind, that closed the investigation. Then those additional emails came up, potentially implicating her in some way with emails found on former disgraced New York Congressman Anthony Weiner's laptop. And so he, in his mind, he felt that he owed the congressional committee a note saying the investigation had been reopened. And I think it's a pretty weak rationale, especially coming right before the election, and of course knowing that he had an active investigation ongoing into Trump. If you were going to make comment about the one, you really, I think, were duty-bound to comment about the other. But in his mind, he had a reason to address the Clinton investigation, and he was handling the Trump investigation like normally does and by the book and making no comment. So, again, it's a weak defense, but I must say, James Comey, in the eyes of everybody who really felt that he swayed the election, and if you supported Hillary Clinton, Mr. Comey was definitely not on your positive list. He's looking a lot better now because it took a lot of guts what he just did. Again, refuting what the President of the United States is saying and doing it in the midst of this hearing and not backing down one bit. And I think the reason he was called before the committee is that he had apparently asked the Justice Department, the Attorney General, to make an announcement saying that there was no evidence showing that President Obama had wiretapped or surveilled the Trump headquarters at Trump Tower in any way. And the Justice Department declined to do that. So he then welcomed, I think, this invitation to testify on Capitol Hill. And he's, you know, he doesn't usually look for those invitations, but I think he knew that he was on a pretty shaky ground and conceivably could have been subpoenaed if he refused to appear.
On that one incident where Trump, about 3 weeks ago now, gets up on a Saturday morning, tweets that Obama has wiretapped him, now everybody has refuted it, basically in the government, who was there at that time. Was it just an outright lie? I mean, can we say that? We don't like to say that somebody lied, certainly the president. But that afternoon, Sean Spicer was there again, tripling down. I'm confused. Is there any chance this happened?
Well, the fact that you're even asking that question shows that it has not been fully dispelled. And if you're out there and you're a Trump supporter and you think the elites have been out to get you and Trump is your savior, you're going to side with him that something is there, something is going on. The fact that all these other agencies say no, well, they're all in cahoots. So, I mean, I think he's propping up his base, and I think his base so far they're really sticking with him on this issue, and on just about every other issue. Now, maybe at some point he'll disappoint them, and they'll turn. But he has his base now, and he's tending to it. And he did another rally in Kentucky the other evening. I noted with interest that the cable networks no longer cover it from start to finish. So they're not giving him all the free TV time for these campaign-style events that he was used to getting. So that mode of operandi, that where he switches gears and goes back into all the oldies but goodies about the wall and repealing Obama and just, you know, goes on and gets a, you know, national audience, I think he's worn out his welcome when it comes to that platform.
And that, I think you're right, is how a Trump supporter sees it, that maybe there's something. But I believe the diehard Trump supporters, which I believe are about 37% of this country now, they do believe it. Whatever he says, they believe. But in reality, is there any way he didn't just flat out lie? knowing what we know.
No, you have to get into his mind. I mean, I suspect, you know, he cherry picks information, and he doesn't read, so he's not reading an explanation of what went on in, you know, Foreign Policy magazine, or even beyond the headline of a New York Times story. He's picking at shreds that are out there on right-wing talk radio. Fox, that judge Napolitano, who apparently has been let go by Fox because he's been pushing this theory about the surveillance, and they let him go. And that's who Trump cited when he had his press conference with Angela Merkel. So, and I'm sure, you know, Breitbart, and they have stories that kind of keep the embers of this charge alive. And Trump, he burst onto the national scene in this selection contest with the whole birther controversy. Now, I'm thinking surely he has to know that was made up. But I think he seizes on conspiracy theories. Remember, he had Ted Cruz's father was implicated in JFK's assassination. He even produced a picture of Cruz's father. Apparently, I don't know, I don't even know who he was with anymore. But he has that kind of turn of mind. And if you go back, people who covered him in New York, you know, the tabloids always had a field day with him because he was always spinning out some crazy story. So, and I don't know that he sits there and says, "I'm going to lie about this." I think he finds something to hang it on to and convinces himself that there's something there. And I think now he feels so persecuted with the media against him, you know, his attorney general embarrassing him. You know, the Republicans not wanting to support his health care plan, even though they ran on repealing and it's about the best he can do. I think every president after a period of time feels like the whole world is against them because they're trying hard and all they get is criticism. This is happening very early in this White House, and I think he really feels that keenly. That you know, everybody's out to get him.
Want to get back to the Russian thing for a second, because what this confirmed on Monday was very peculiar, because I don't know that anybody thought that the investigation had been going on that long and continues to go on. That means this investigation's been going on for 8 months, continuing to go on. We know there's ties with Flynn. There certainly have been meetings with Sessions and Trump's son-in-law. We know that the things Manafort, his former campaign manager, we know there are odd ties there. This Carter Page, I saw his interview with Anderson Cooper, didn't understand a word of it, and I don't think Anderson did either. But right. How deep is this? Because I think people in the beginning, people brushed it off that, oh, this could never lead to anything horrible. This isn't as big as people are propping it up. Because what I saw Monday, and correct me if I'm wrong, I saw this shift from a story about our intelligence being breached to investigations of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little different.
Right. Well, I would recommend to your listeners lengthy opening statement that Adam Schiff gave. He's the ranking Democrat on that committee. He's a California Democrat. He was a U.S. attorney in California and a member of the California Senate before he came to Washington. And he unspooled all of the links going chronologically, including the infamous dossier and what has been established as true in that dossier and what hasn't been, and saying, could this all be a coincidence? Maybe. We need to find out. But he went through it step by step in a very cogent way, and even-handed and serious and not that bombastic. I mean, I thought he was the real star on Monday. And you can say that all of these links are coincidental and they don't really add up to anything. But there's a mountain of them. And they're buttressed by the fact that Mr. Trump will not reveal his tax returns. And on C-SPAN, just a little bit earlier, the House members of the Ways and Means Committee were pressing on the floor of the House for a vote to have the committee. There is a rule that they can take advantage of, that they can force the disclosure of the tax returns. The Republicans have so far not gone along with it, but the Democrats keep pressing. So I think it's difficult to say there's no there there. Now, there may not be enough to end up in an indictment of the President of the United States, but if I were Mr. Manafort today, I wouldn't feel too happy about the money trail that leads to Ukraine and big sums of money and that he received. So I think the FBI is doing their job and the intelligence committees are doing their job. And you mentioned the timeline. I think reporters knew last summer that the FBI was looking at this. And the lots of reporters, not me personally, had copies of that dossier that were floating around and didn't really do anything about it because they couldn't confirm it. So this has been going on a good long while, and Mr. Comey, when asked about it, said, "I cannot give you any timeline." And I think this could easily go on another year before they wrap up any kind of investigation. And I wish there were more a sense of urgency, because I think everybody, including President Trump, needs to know what's going on and should either have the facts confirmed or refuted. Otherwise, there is a cloud over his presidency.
There absolutely is a cloud over his presidency. But when you look at it right now, what is the chance that with a resignation of Flynn and the things that keep leaking out about him, the things we know about Sessions, the things we know about Manafort that are now leaking out, the things we know, like the FBI has now laid their cards on the table and said, we are doing this investigation. What are the chances that all those people knew what was going on and Donald Trump didn't know a thing?
I think you really have to have a strong belief in Donald Trump to believe that he didn't know what was going on, especially with Flynn, who spent months, really, or at least months, the campaign, he traveled with him. He was speaking at those rallies, and he was leading the chants of lock her up. Now, it's hard to imagine that in the downtime on the plane that he didn't share any of this, which is why you do see speculation that who's going to be the first to get Flynn to talk. So far, he's not given any interviews at all. So I think he's kind of the key to the kingdom there. But once you get these active investigations going, what does the stuff show up in emails? It's a fine line between contacts with Russia and collusion. Contacts alone would not rise to the level of, malice or really invite some sort of response by the FBI. But if you get into the territory of collusion where you kind of knew what they were doing and you were encouraging them, and you don't have to look beyond candidate Trump's public remarks. He was openly encouraging them to look at Hillary Clinton's emails and saying how much I love Wikipedia. Not Wikipedia.
WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks. I don't I don't know that he reads Wikipedia. He doesn't read much of anything. Anyway.
Well, you know, Eleanor, here's the weird thing. Nobody ever campaigned like what you just explained. Now, isn't that alone? I mean, honestly, if you look at that, you know, I hope Russia can find her. You would be heavily rewarded by the media in this country. I mean, isn't that, if your campaign is talking to them and you're making those statements, I mean, isn't that to some degree collusion, asking them to look into it? I mean, did he mean it as a joke? Do we even, law, do we look at that and say, oh, it's a joke?
Well, I think it would have to be more than those public statements, because he could say they were a joke, I guess. I think it would have to be something beyond the public statements. And, you know, I think that's what they're looking for.
I had dinner the other night, Eleanor, when this was coming out. And here's what fascinates me. And I understand the common wisdom is that Hillary Clinton's political career is over, even though apparently there are drippings that she might run for mayor of New York. At what point does she, who has not given an interview yet, which I think is kind of odd, 5 months out now, and that she's giving speeches, writing a book, dropping hints that she might run for mayor of New York, at what point do you look at this? Because this is different than Hubert Humphrey, because Hubert Humphrey lost in a landslide. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. A foreign entity possibly could have interfered to cost her the election. She only lost the three states she lost by the amount of people that wouldn't even fill a football stadium. The FBI director's investigating the guy who did it. And if there is collusion on his part, Hillary Clinton, who wanted to be the first female president, who this was her life's ambition, do you just throw your hands up and say, ah, shucks, that was tough luck?
You know, I'm a fan of Hillary Clinton's, and I'd like to think that she could have another run at this, and that with all that's come out about Trump, that he could be defeated, if not gone, before she would have a chance to run against him. But I think she's responding in the same vein as Barack Obama, even though she didn't hold the presidency. I don't think she wants to get into the quagmire. And in terms of dropping hints about mayor, I don't think any of that is coming from Hillary Clinton. I think that's several weeks ago. I don't think another run is in the cards for her.
Well,
I really don't.
I guess what I'm looking, and like I say, who knows how far it will go. But if, you know, God forbid, because what it would do to this country, Donald Trump was indicted or had to resign or was impeached. And it's my guess that in these cases, if the president knew, the vice president probably knew too. So I think it would be, we've never had anything like this. So how do you not, how would you just pass the power to Paul Ryan of the presidency or appoint a new vice president like Jerry Ford and just say?
I think it's more likely that Pence, I mean, if I accept the premise that Trump is not going to be able to serve out his term, Pence came on rather late, the vice president. He was never an intimate of Donald Trump's. I don't believe that he necessarily knew what was going on. Remember, you know, Flynn resigned over the fact that he misled Pence, who apparently was, you know, believing of him. If he knew what was going on, Pence knew what was going on, he would have known that Flynn wasn't telling the truth. I think it's more likely that Vice President Pence would fill out the term.
You know, when
and you know, over at the White House, it's interesting. At the Trump-Merkel press conference, Pence was sitting off to the side with the family and all the aides, and one of the camera guys has been there, you know, for decades, said to me, I just look at Pence and I think he's smirking, and he's looking at the way Trump is conducting this press conference, and he's thinking, he's not going to be in there long. That job will be mine.
You know.
So I think people look at Pence and they may not agree with his politics or his very conservative ideology, but he's a stable human being. And I think even people who support Trump worry about the instability that he demonstrates in his behavior.
It's interesting because there's a book coming in April from Professor Lichtman, who has predicted every campaign since 1980, that says Trump is not going to make it. And through the first term, it's fascinating. But the only thing on Hillary is, I think if Trump stays, I think you're right. I think she says, well, you know, I gave it a shot. This is what happened. Tough luck. I just think the type of woman she is, to have your legs cut out in your shot by a foreign entity, and then to learn not only that, but that possibly the person you were running against was doing something illegal to make that happen. I don't know the country would stand for that. Humphrey lost by such a landslide, I don't think the Democrats and the country had a leg to stand on when Nixon left. I think this is different. It's more divided.
The thing is, again, I like Hillary Clinton a lot. I think she would have been a very good president. But I do not see this chorus of people, even those who voted for her, you know, calling her back to the stage. I don't see that grassroots call for her. And, you know, if it spins out like you just said, maybe that would happen. But there wasn't that much enthusiasm for her under the best of circumstances. So I think people would be, you know, would be looking for a new face in the next generation.
The only thing I say about that is that I think the problem is that the Democrats right now are at a loss in the branches of government. I don't think they like that. There's a lot on the line with the Supreme Court and things. And I think it's interesting Hillary hasn't given an interview. I wish Barbara Walters was still around, because I would love to hear what Hillary thinks, because I think that first interview will signal what's going on. And I think there's something to her not giving an interview yet.
She is still, Barbara Walters still is around, but I guess she's not really doing any interviews anymore. But, you know, you do have some big names like, you know, Robin Roberts, who did a lot of interviews with President Obama. She was a favorite of his. So Hillary wanted to speak, and I'll bet all those big names have requests in, as do a lot of little names. because people really are anxious to hear from her.
Eleanor, with 6 minutes left here, we have two big issues, but what's going to happen tomorrow? Is the vote even going to happen? Does Trump have the votes for health care?
If they don't have the votes, I imagine they hold off. They don't have the votes as of today, but I think his argument is compelling that they all ran on it. They got to do something. Problem is, the people who are holding this up, the Freedom Caucus folks, are in districts where they have won with like 61% and 63% of the vote, and their constituents don't think this bill goes far enough. So they're not individually going to get hurt by a no vote. And everybody on Capitol Hill thinks about themselves first and their own reelection chances. So we'll see whether Trump can actually sway enough of his own people to get it through the House, which is a small hurdle compared to what lies ahead in the Senate. He'd almost be better off just, you know, losing the bill now and going on to tax reform or something else that might be more popular.
Is it conceivable, Eleanor, that, okay, let's say they don't bring it, it fails, one of those two situations happens tomorrow. Is it conceivable that they can do what Rand Paul would like to do, is then take their bill and put it through? Now, that probably would not pass either, but
right.
Wouldn't that hurt Trump? Because this is Trump, art of the deal, walking through the Capitol yesterday, trying to make this happen. Doesn't he then lose health care either way, even if the Freedom Caucus does try to put theirs through?
Yeah.
It's no longer Trump's.
I think Trump has lost a lot of credibility, even the way this health care plan has been explained. People who voted for him in red states lose the most. Second of all, Rand Paul's bill is a Senate bill. I don't think he has a sponsor in the House, and I don't see that happening in the House. What they want is a clean repeal, and then they want to put up another bill to replace it. And everybody who's looked at that sees the incredible dislocation that would cause in the insurance markets and the people it would hurt. So they're dealing in the realm of fantasy when it comes to health care. I'd love to know what Dr. Zeke Emanuel, who was one of the architects of Obamacare, he actually met with Trump earlier this week. I haven't seen whether he's talked about it at all. But if the right people could get to Trump, you could remake Obamacare, call it Trump Care, and actually maybe it would actually be fixing what's wrong with Obamacare, but keeping the structure, and then calling it Trump Care. They could do that if they could get over the politics of it.
We're 24 hours away, Eleanor. You've been there for a long time in Washington. If you were a betting person, does it even get a vote tomorrow? Does it pass, or do we keep Obamacare?
I don't know. I really don't know. You'd have to talk to somebody who's up there counting votes. I think it's razor thin, whichever direction it goes.
Last thing I want to talk about with 2 minutes left, the budget. Trump's budget came out, panic, panic, panic for everybody. Meals on Wheels loses federal funding. PBS is zeroed out. PBS president says this could be the end of PBS. Does this budget ever pass?
No, the budget is dead on arrival, which is not new. Just about every president's budget is dead on arrival. That's the opening bid for Trump. But it does spell trouble ahead because he doesn't want to touch entitlements. He wants to give more money to defense. And so all of the domestic programs that we know and love are going to take a hit, not as big a hit as he wants, but a lot of the money is going to come out of those programs, not necessarily Meals on Wheels. I couldn't believe the OMB director saying it doesn't show results.
What did that mean? I'm still trying to figure that.
I know. I mean, what, not everybody has developed a big belly or something? I mean, I just don't. It made no sense. It's designed to keep people in their homes, which is actually cheaper on the government than if people have to go into facilities. So maybe it doesn't show strong enough results in that direction. He was talking like a green eye shades person trying to assess a social program, and the two don't go together.
Eleanor, if the budget fails, which dead on arrival, if health care fails, which Rand Paul says is dead on arrival, he's under investigation by the FBI, where is this presidency?
Well, I think Neil Gorsuch is on track to get the Supreme Court seat. And, for a lot of people, that's all this election was about.
Does Roe versus Wade?
Yes, exactly.
Does it go if he gets it?
I don't know. I think you would need another conservative voice at least. And, Gorsuch clerked for Justice Kennedy, and Kennedy has upheld Roe. So I don't automatically think that Gorsuch is an overturn vote for Roe.
And, Eleanor, before we let you go, because it has been a big week, is there anything brewing in Washington we don't know about right now? Is there anything you know that you see on the horizon? Anybody we should be watching?
Wow. this is not... it's not a secret, but I mean, I was really looking for the people who starred in the committee hearings, and I thought Al Franken, who kept such a low profile for so long because he was a Saturday Night Live comedian before he became a senator, really distinguished himself in the questioning of Gorsuch. And he did it with pointed facts and information. He also did it with some humor. He's very good.
Hillary Clinton might not run again, but I would almost bet the furniture that in the world of entertainment, Al Franken will.
That's a possibility.
I mean, he's been awful out front.
Right. But Amy Klobuchar, who's his fellow senator, is also interested. I think that it's going to be a pretty crowded field next time around.
And could we ever, because Al Franken has said he's an atheist, could we ever elect an atheist?
Wow. I think people still have trouble with that, but I think you'd have to present it in a humanist way, and people who are atheists call themselves humanists. So I think running as a humanist as opposed to an atheist might be the answer there. It's like progressive instead of liberal.
Yeah, well, I, the interesting thing, I think we all kind of guess Warren will run. We all kind of guess Booker will run. I think Franken will run. Hillary probably won't. Here's the wild card, though. Biden probably won't. But the wild card is Bernie Sanders in the town hall on CNN over health care with Ted Cruz was asked if he'd run again, and he said, I don't know. Is Bernie going to try it again?
I don't think so, but, you know, keep hope alive when it comes to the presidency, because then more people pay attention to you. I don't think Elizabeth Warren will run either. I think she's very focused in her lane, those economic issues and inequality and all that, but I don't see her launching a presidential campaign. And, you know, she's a couple of years younger than Hillary, but, you know, I think, you know, she's, you know, if the Democrats are looking to the next generation, it would not be Elizabeth Warren.
Or Bernie Sanders.
Or Bernie Sanders, for that matter.
Or Joe Biden. And you know, the interesting thing, and the closing note is, what I think about Hillary, which is kind of strange, is if Trump does stay, he's older than her, as I've said before. Bernie's older mm-hmm. than her. Biden's older than her. I don't think it's likely, but I don't think it's impossible.
And she's the only one who got attacked for her age, which was really, you know, when she stumbled when she had the flu. And, you know, nobody else has gotten attacked for faltering, for being old, except Hillary. And she was the youngest of that crew out there, and I would say the hardiest. She, you know, she did 11 hours of a Senate hearing, and she did all the campaigning.
Everybody's
entitled to get the flu every once in a while.
And she's got quite a case. I'm not sure, you know, Schumer is right there right now. Who knows how long he'll stay in that position? And mm-hmm. they did kind of go the old route when they elected when they were trying to restructure the Democratic Party, they kind of went the other way. They didn't go the Bernie Sanders way. And like I said, Hillary's got quite a case to plead to the American people about, troubles.
Right, well, let's see what all of these probes turn up, and maybe then she will come out as the conquering hero.
I
kind of doubt it, but it would make a good movie anyway.
Wouldn't it, though?
That's right. It really would.
Eleanor, I always enjoy the conversations. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Eleanor Clift of the Daily Beast, there it is, and we're done for the day. Remember, Michael Dukakis tomorrow, 12:15. This is Scott Spears on this day, heading for the dugout.
And the got into my cigars, and he took some of my cigars, which made me very unhappy.
Well, I can't wait. It's going to be these two guys.